Advertising your business with GCN is simple, effective,
and more affordable than you might think.
Visit advertise.gcnlive.com for more info. Take your business to the next level.
You can stick it to the man and big tech. Join our FTL social mastodon at social.freetalklive.com.
This is Liberty Conspiracy on Free Talk Live. Thanks for being interested in the principles of individual liberty. You can listen to Liberty Conspiracy Live every Monday through Friday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. Streaming on my Twitter/X feed, that being at Gard Goldsmith, GARDGOLDSMITH. Or you can get involved with the chat at Rumble or Rockfin. You can also find my Substack, that's the Gardner Goldsmith Substack, and Gardner is spelled G-A-R-D-N-E-R. Every Sunday, we have the Sunday News Assembly with at least 20 stories pertaining to your individual liberty, plus contextual information to help carry away long-standing lessons about freedom. Let's get right to the information from Liberty Conspiracy. First off tonight, it's The Flash, and this Flash is the Bee Gees Blitz edition of The Flash. Yeah, we're going to go very quickly through the narratives of a couple stories, and then we're going to get into the nonsense narrative collapse. Item number one, and it's coming in two parts, A and B. One A is J6, if that's not enough numbers and letters for you, about the nonsense narratives collapsing. And then item 1B is the Israeli claims regarding October 7th deaths and the hospital hideout. Then we're going to discuss item number 2. Second big chunk is the Biden administration. Biden is invoking what's called the Defense Production Act, a Cold War era statute, as we often heard over the weekend, if you were clued in on that particular story, among the many that you probably covered. And that is something where he's invoking it to push pork spending on heat pumps for all of us trapped in his collectivist corral. Yeah, and those of you who live in the north of this collectivist corral know that heat pumps are not replacements for furnaces. And yet they're depicting them that way. And that's just part of what they're depicting as A-OK. No Illuminati symbolism there. And no, it's not the whatever, the white symbol stuff or whatever. Our third item is going to be GOPers pushing something else themselves. And I know, shocker, a bunch of GOPers are acting like they're Democrats. I know, it's weird. Yeah, they're pushing a carbon tax / tariff. We'll give you the information on that one. And I want to say hi to everybody inside Rockfin Chat and inside Rumble Chat. Thank you for the heads up, everybody. Super awesome of you to be so cool. Carlos, nice to have you there. And I really appreciate you. Good to hear me. Thank you, Carlos. Thank you so much, Nancy, for being there. Little John as well. We don't have a lot of time, so let's fly through this. And I want to thank everybody also at Hal 9000 and Risha M and Birdhouse Blues over at Rumble. Please hit the thumbs up and spread the word on the show, even with that blank period of vocals. Yeah, I know. It is frustrating, but what can you do? And it's one of those deals where you come back from the weekend and like, oh, no. Shouldn't have to do it, but you got to do it. You got to do it. So let's see what we can see tonight on the program as we run through. You know it. You got to love it. It's time for us to get funky and go to another planet real quick with some breaking news stories.
Oh, well, clean, huh? Hold it a second. Mary's parents burned to death last year. Wait a minute. I know you guys. You're from the News Flash.
Yeah, everybody, and it's time for us to go to Massachusetts.
Go inside. Massachusetts.
Oh, the Bee Gees. I love these guys.
Something's telling me I must go home.
Oh, man. I was saying, if you listen to this tune real close.
I left her standing on the road.
The Bee Gees have been quoted and throughout their illustrious career, of course, Robin, Maurice, and Barry, the brothers Gibb, and their younger brother, of course, doing amazingly well on his own in a solo career. But the Bee Gees right there, Robin, Maurice, and Barry Gibb, just amazing talents, deserving of every moment in the spotlight and all the great success they had. They mentioned that one of their great inspirations was Roy Orbison. They loved his vocals, and you can tell by listening to this song, you can actually tell they actually get some of their structure from a classic Roy Orbison pattern. That could be Roy. Awesome, awesome stuff. I never got to see the Bee Gees, but my sister got to see them, and I got the tour T-shirt. So I could fake it, but I wouldn't do that. It's the Spirits Having Flown tour that they did couple decades ago, many, many years ago. I wish I could have seen them. That would have been great. But that takes us to a quick story about the writing of that song, Massachusetts. This was done on a bet. Robin Gibb and the brothers Gibb were on a boat somewhere. I think they might have been like New York or something like that, going down the Hudson River. I don't even remember. And someone was saying, hey, let's see if you can write songs about the states. It was like a bet. Who can write a song about the states? And so Robin, even though he had never been to Massachusetts, he just made it up. He made up a song about Massachusetts without ever having been to Massachusetts. And it became a big hit, and everybody loves it in Massachusetts. They, you know, it evokes thoughts of Boston and the Freedom Trail and Western Massachusetts and the Mohawk Trail and all the great Indian settlements around there and so on. But he'd never been there. It's amazing. It's almost one of the anthems for Massachusetts, and the guy who wrote it had not even been to Massachusetts up to that point. So let's now find out what's going on in Massachusetts as we head over to this website, the Swellesley Report. And you can see the S added to Wellesley, Massachusetts. And the reason they did that was because Wellesley is called Swellesley by people who aren't big fans of the high falutin, kind of highbrow, elitist people who tend to live around Wellesley. And Wellesley is well known as having a lot of very wealthy leftists living there. And this story seems to evoke many thoughts about those wealthy leftists. It has to do with Wellesley High School. Now, just to let you know, when I got up this morning, I turned on WRKO out of Boston, and this story was on fire around Boston. So I'd like to hear from you and find out whether or not you've heard about this, too, because the radio host, and yes, I was on the WRKO today. I wasn't invited on. I just called. I just called in because I thought something was missing from a lot of the calls. And they were getting tons of calls. People were very upset about this story from Wellesley High School. It has to do with patriotism and homecoming and traditions. And a lot of people evoked memories of their own childhood and what they think is patriotic and what they think is being lost. And over again on the radio on Jeff Cooner's show on WRKO out of Boston today, caller after caller after caller just repeated their absolute disgust with the way the public school systems were working, the cultural Marxism. Oh, a rainbow flag would definitely go up. You know, they would have no problem with that if they wanted to have Tommy Has Two Fathers in the library or something like that. They would have no problem with that. But traditional Americana? Well, let's dig into this story and find out what the details are. America Day fails to make Wellesley High's Spirit Week cut. So, we're only going to talk about this briefly in the newsflash and then dig into those bigger stories. But I wanted to give you this sort of lighter story, but it does have a lesson, especially coming from Massachusetts and the history of Massachusetts. Spirit Week is a long-standing tradition at Wellesley High School leading up to the annual pep rally and big Thanksgiving Day football matchup versus Needham. And I've mentioned Needham before because that's where Channel 5 WCBB is located. That's where Matt Taibbi's father, Mike Taibbi, worked. It's right on Route 128, which is sort of a circumferential beltway around Massachusetts. And that's where a lot of the tech companies and biotech companies are located, on Route 128. So they have their yearly football for Thanksgiving, football matchup. Every year, the halls vibrate with excitement. Do they really? As students psych themselves up by theme dressing to express their Raiders pride. And as I mentioned when you couldn't hear me, the Massachusetts folks probably have a bit of an affinity for the Oakland Raiders after the former Patriots quarterback Plunkett was traded to Oakland, and that winter was a star, absolutely stellar for the Oakland Raiders. And Jim Plunkett, I think his name was, he scored like twice in one game just shortly after the trade from the New England Patriots to the Raiders, twice within like 40 seconds. The guy was amazing. And he seems like a pretty cool guy. He always reminded me of that actor, A. Martinez, who was on, L.A. Law or something like that? But anyway, this year's Spirit Days have included Mismatch Monday, Pajama Day, and Tropical Tuesday. Now, I know they don't have Taxation Thursday, but that's sort of part of this. But they don't have America Day, which was proposed by some students but rejected by the Wellesley High School administration. And that's what got everybody calling. And the host was just like, wow. He says, this is blowing up. And he was saying that the story was going national. So I'd love to hear from you if you're, you know, out there beyond Massachusetts, beyond New England. If you did hear about this story amongst all the stories that you were covering and looking at, let me know. I'm curious to see if this thing did get national from Wellesley, Massachusetts. In a letter to the school community, Principal Jamie Chisholm explained the decision not to go forward with that spirit theme because it felt really different than the other themes kids came up with for the week. We felt that the topic has been politicized beyond our school, and we wanted to avoid politics. This coming from a political employee. This coming from an employee of the polis. We don't want things to be political. We don't want politics to enter this, even though this is the polis. And so everything we do here is, by definition, political. Kind of missing the big, big train coming down on you there, buddy. You're kind of missing the reality of this. Everything you do is political. Even the temperature at which you set the classrooms is a political hot button. Jeez. Spirit Week is intended to be light and a fun way for our students to get excited about our pep rally and Thanksgiving Day football game. Well, that's awesome. As you get geared up for Thanksgiving, think about this one. So I was hearing all these people calling into the show, and Jeff Cooner and so on, and everybody was, you know, almost to a person. They were just going absolutely bonkers. Like, this wouldn't have happened when I was a kid. This is crazy. Don't these people understand? This is America. What happened to tradition? This is Thanksgiving coming up, for goodness sake. And they can't even acknowledge America? They're in America. So I called up and I was like, well, actually, they said, what happened to their patriotism? What happened to that? Don't they love American tradition? And I was like, well, if you actually go back in American history, a real patriotic person would acknowledge that government isn't supposed to be involved with schools. In fact, this very debate is a manifestation of the problem, the practical problem of funding education through the polis. was like, not only is it immoral to tell your neighbor that he's going to shell out money for a school system he might not like, but in addition to that, you aren't going to please everybody. And this is a perfect example of it. We've got the principal, Jamie Chisholm, doing one thing, and everybody's all set on fire like fireworks. It's crazy. But, of course, it's not fireworks. It's not Spirit Week. It's not patriotic. But that was what everybody was looking at. They were assuming that this town-run, government-run education system was somehow part of Americana, that it was somehow part of America to have a government-run school system recognize America as good. I mean, if that isn't convoluted logic, I don't know what is. So what we want to do is we want to promote the ideas of patriotism and American freedom through a collectivist decision-making process. It's like, no, no. So I called the show, and it was really hard to get through. It was like over and over and over again, trying to get through, trying to get through. I got through, and Jeff Kooner was very, very kind. And we've disagreed on some things, but he was real nice. And so he said, I said, look, you know, one of the things that's almost ironic about this is people are talking about American patriotism and tradition and so on. It's not American tradition to have tax-funded schools. I was like, and in fact, Massachusetts is probably one of the best places to bring this up, because in the early 1800s, the architect Charles Bulfinch, who's famous for Boston's Bulfinch Place, and he's like, oh, yeah, you know, like the host is like, oh, I know Bulfinch Place. I'm like, yeah, he designed Bulfinch Place and a number of churches and buildings around the area. He wanted government-run schools in the early 1800s. They kept trying over and over again with different people from Harvard, originally Calvinist people, and then Harvard got taken over by Unitarian Universalists, and they kept trying to push first to get the Catholics away from their church-run schools, and because they wanted it to be Protestant, so they wanted them to be good citizens, and they just couldn't convince people to get away from their church-run schools and private schools. So Bulfinch, who wanted government-run schools, he actually paid for, he funded a study called the Bulfinch Study, and you can see it in the work of Sam Blumenfeld. I think John Taylor Gatto might have brought it up, and Charlotte Iserby, who sort of got her start from talking to people like Sam and doing local stuff and seeing how bad things were. Sam actually got a copy of the Bulfinch Study. Bulfinch had a study done, and it showed that like 90-something percent of the kids in the Massachusetts area were educated privately through at least sixth grade. And the literacy level was very, very high, as you know, at that time. So it wasn't necessary on a practical level, and of course it's immoral. So I called up, I was like, yeah, it's ahistorical. It's actually not patriotic to try to get people to recognize American patriotism within government-run schools. What you'd want to do is get people to recognize that the government-run school system, where all these people are arguing with each other, is ahistorical and was shown to be that in Massachusetts itself by Charles Bulfinch. So he's like, oh, thank you so much. He's got this funny thing that he says to the callers. He's like, he goes, Gardner, he says, I love you in a non-sexual way. And I was like, oh, well, okay, thanks. That's nice of you to say. So there you go. That is one of the big things I wanted to start with on our newsflash. And there's one very small one that I want to add to that. And it comes with a very fine old TV theme. The news for the courts, you might ask. Now, in the news for the courts, one and all, is the big Twitter/X news. And in fact, you might have heard that Elon Musk is bringing a big, big suit against Media Matters because it is trying to portray X/Elon Musk as being somehow anti-Semitic and so on. And Michael Schellenberger says the media say X is placing Apple, IBM, and other ads near pro-Nazi content, but it is not. We tried various ways to replicate Media Matters' research and could not. The real goal of Media Matters isn't to fight anti-Semitism. It's to destroy X as a free speech platform. And as you know, Democrats need to censor and spread disinformation behind media war on Elon Musk's X. So a number of advertisers are pulling their advertising from X. So there is not some reflection of anti-Semitism. And in fact, these accusations have gotten Elon Musk to act in a defensive way, where certain materials that I wish were being shown on Twitter/X, Elon Musk is getting some of those removed. If you watch the Gray Zone today, there's footage from the Middle East, from the Gaza Hamas Israel battle, that Musk actually said, okay, you know, it was up, but we're going to take it down. These sorts of pressures stifling free speech, this is definitely not what we want. And sure, those people who are advertising, they're free to not advertise. But to see Media Matters, which is very heavily connected to people like John Podesta and other left-wing political forces, try to depict X as being pro-Nazi is just absurd. I mean, talk about using Nazi tactics and lies to try to silence free speech. That's what they're engaging in. So check it out if you get the opportunity. Michael Schellenberger's recent one, it's called Public. That's his Substack. It's called Public. They've got a very good overview on them. It's Liberty Conspiracy on Free Talk Live. This hour of Free Talk Live is brought to you by Dash Digital Cash. Dash is the cryptocurrency designed to be used for spending. Rising fees have made Bitcoin useless for purchases, but Dash continues to have fees less than 1 cent per transaction, and its features ensure Dash is undefeated as the most useful cryptocurrency in the marketplace. From a technical standpoint, Dash transactions are irreversible and its network is protected from 51% of attacks by their Chainlocks technology. There's no need to wait for a confirmation before considering a Dash transaction complete. So it's great for merchants. Dash is one of the oldest cryptocurrencies and is widely available on exchanges, including the decentralized Maya protocol. And it's available in multi-crypto wallets. It's easy to get and use Dash. Start by learning more at Dash.org. Big thanks to Dash DAO for sending us 32 Dash per month to promote Dash on the air. Visit Dash.org to learn about Dash. Dash.org.
Complement your health with hemp-derived cannabinoid oil. We've always believed that the closer to Earth, the better it is for our bodies. Our hemp-derived cannabinoid oil is phytocannabinoid-rich, full-spectrum, and organically grown. Finally, hemp made easy, clean, and effective. GCNHemp.com or call 877-878-4203. That's right, we cut through the red tape. It's now available at GCNHemp.com or call 877-878-4203.
As the cold and flu season approaches, Silver Lungs is ready to help you and your family through the toughest of the year by supporting your immune system and overall health. From our best-selling colloidal silver generating system to our entire line of silver-based skin gels, nasal sprays, soaps, and silver solutions, Silver Solutions remain one of nature's most powerful and least expensive antibacterial agents. Now you can produce your own for pennies a day in the comfort of your home using the breakthrough technology of the Silver Lungs generator. Learn more today at www.silverlungs.com.
USA News Update. A project manager at Tavis Rogers, fired by Newmont Mining Corporation for missing a COVID-19 vaccination deadline, has filed a lawsuit alleging religious discrimination. Rogers, employed for about 7 months, raised concerns about the vaccination requirement issued in November 2021. he sought permission to work remotely instead of getting vaccinated, but the lawsuit claims the company did not accommodate his request, leading to his termination. The two individuals who lost their lives in a fatal explosion on the U.S.-Canada border on Wednesday have been identified as a married couple from Grand Island, New York. Monica and Kurt P. Villani, both 53 years old, were involved in a crash on Rainbow Bridge, the entry and exit point to Canada at Niagara Falls, on Wednesday morning. Witnesses reported that the vehicle went airborne after hitting a cement median, subsequently catching fire and exploding upon colliding with a border crossing booth. Skip Kelly, USA News.
Wellness and self-care doesn't have to be complicated. So keep it simple and take good care of yourself with Sunny Bay Heating Pads. Our heating pads soothe pains in the neck, back, and shoulders while relaxing muscles and increasing blood circulation. Sunny Bay Heating Pads have always been made in the USA and hand-filled to perfection with the highest quality materials. Sunny Bay Heating Pads are the perfect wellness gift for loved ones or yourself. See all of our high-quality products at sunny-bay.com, including heated body pads, neck pillows, heated neck and body wraps, and our stress-reducing lavender line. They're all affordable, durable, and in stock now and ready for immediate shipping direct from sunny-bay.com. Read our trusted, authentic, and real reviews at sunny-bay.com or just search for Sunny Bay Heating Pad. To your good health and wellness from Sunny Bay.
Hi, this is Sophie Winnick, longtime distributor and user of Longevity products. In the last few years, my family went through a crisis. Everything else in my life, including my business, had to be put on the back burner. Thankfully, life is getting back to normal now. But the one thing I never had to worry about was my business and my monthly commission. I've been a distributor for Longevity for over 17 years, since before it was Longevity. And I've got to say, the most amazing thing about this company is the people. While my family was in crisis, other distributors stepped in and helped my customers, simply because that's what Longevity people do, even for people they don't know. For me, it has never been about getting rich. It was about a product I could stand behind, a company I could count on, and a monthly commission check that has never, not once, been late in 17 years. Longevity is truly a business for everyone, even people who have too much to do. I'm Sophie Winnick. I'm just like you. I have a real life, real ups and downs, but I know I will always have Longevity.
Appreciate what we do? Help us advertise, market, and promote for just $5 a month at amp.freetalklive.com.
We continue on Liberty Conspiracy Live on Free Talk Live. To head on into the courts, one and all. Glorious. Now it's time for us to go to our first much, much heavier story. It's a major story. It has to do with a lot of people's livelihoods. And Jason Barker, my hat is off to you, my proverbial hat is off to you for holding tough and helping so many people out there. I just wish I could give you a high five, dude. Just great, great stuff. And folks, if you're new to the show and you don't know what Jason Barker did to try to help people, along with David Knight promoting it, he really helped out a lot of folks in composing writing that would allow for people to get exemptions if they were in the military to not get this DNA damaging, mRNA, clot producing, heart damaging, life shortening jab that was untested, that was surrounded by lies, and of course fed through government coercion. Now we're seeing the results a couple years later at Thanksgiving time. Here we go. Former troops punished over Biden's vaccine mandate sue for billions in lost wages. But if only they had listened to the government of New York, then they wouldn't. Oh, that's right. They would have gotten the jabs because the government of New York was engaging in mis and disinformation. Don't forget, that's Kathy Hochul, now the governor of New York, and the former governor of New York, Andrew Cuomo,
was caught trying to eliminate text messages and emails and trying to convince people to not tell people the truth about what he was doing, sending older people, sick people, into elderly homes that were being run by the state of New York. And they had one of the worst worldwide levels of elderly people dying. That's elderly abuse. I mean, it's just ridiculous. But, and of course, that's just the outcome of it. The taking of the money to fund those elderly homes and the government control is the immoral imposition. Here's the story from Christina Wong. Former troops are suing the U.S. government, and we've got a lot of court stories. They're suing for lost pay and benefits due to the Biden administration's military so-called vaccine mandate. One of the lawyers who successfully brought down the anthrax vaccine told Breitbart News. Attorney Dale Sarin, not like sarin gas, a retired Marine, and fellow attorneys Andy Meyer and Brandon Johnson are representing the former troops in three separate lawsuits they plan to turn into a class action lawsuit. And by the way, I didn't get to mention, you know, people like Jay Bhattacharya and the folks from the Great Barrington Declaration now involved with the Missouri v. Biden suit, which is, I'm sure the Supreme Court, based on this composition, is going to find in favor of them that their professions were hurt by government engaging in censorship and Facebook welcoming that censorship and other platforms being manipulated by the government, both during the Trump administration and during the Biden administration, as many of the Twitter files revealed, and as discovery will probably even reveal even further. So remember the Missouri v. Biden case that also has combined the second group of plaintiffs, JFK's Children's Health Defense, because they too are claiming damage from government censorship about the correct protocol for any type of a pandemic, which is the natural protocol, not the artificial one that gives people a false sense of security through so-called jabs. So this is a class action suit on behalf of all service members who were either kicked out or illegally ordered to stop drilling, resulting in loss of pay or benefits. Sarin said the amount is in the billions. So that, of course, then brings us to the question that we brought up earlier when we looked at the Osama bin Laden letter as to who is actually responsible. This is where we're all going to end up paying these billions. In fact, the U.S. government is $33 trillion in debt. Just the interest on the debt is greater than $1 trillion a year now. So we're running into a real problem where multiple generations, not just the next generation, but multiple generations are being born into debt slavery on the federal government side. We're not even looking at the state governments, which often are in debt. And then they try to balance their books by getting Medicare and Medicaid money or school money from the feds. They're all attached. They're all desperate. That's this federalist form of fascism, which isn't really federalist in any way whatsoever because they're attached. They're not a true confederation of mostly independent nation states, which is what the founders had hoped to have under the Articles of Confederation and got completely wiped away when the usurpers like Alexander Hamilton came in, said they wanted to amend the Articles of Confederation, and then just completely replaced it without the 100% vote of the original states as the Articles of Convention actually stipulated. So the whole thing is a massive sham going back to those types of Machiavellian miscreants like Alexander Hamilton and others like Robert Morris and their banking friends at the time. So now we're all attached. That, as we mentioned, leads us to the thoughts about the bin Laden letter, whether it was artificially pushed forward or not. We know, as you know, as I know, most of the people who have been caught as authentic terrorists, not the FBI trumped up plots that we mentioned last night in the piece that I read to you from that journal article that was 70 pages long. And no, I didn't read all 70 pages if you missed the show last night. But the ones who actually have appeared in court, like the Times Square bomber, they have said they pled guilty. He's pled guilty. And he said, I will plead guilty 100 times more because of what the United States government is doing in the Middle East. You look at the Pulse nightclub attacker. It wasn't that he didn't like gay people. It was that he went there, and as he told the police, he was doing it to protest U.S. policy in the Middle East, the Islamic nations, the U.S. backing of the Zionist state of Israel, the U.S. slaughtering hundreds of thousands of innocent women and children in Iraq with the embargo, an act of war. All of these types of things that they have done, supporting tyrants, overthrowing governments like the government of Iran in 1953. All these things, they're all tied up. Their friends, their relatives are being wiped out. And we've got news coming up from anti-war about even more happening in Iraq. And as I mentioned, it looked like Iraq was starting to turn away from the United States. Well, lo and behold, remember we talked about that the other day, right? Lo and behold, what's going on? United States attacking sites in Iraq, where they already have massive bases in Iraq and a giant embassy there. So let's get back to this military one, however. We're going to end up paying, right? So just like they tell us, the people in Washington, that the government is us, even though I have no choice, if I don't pay, I'm going to go to prison. So actually, I do have a choice. I could not pay and go to prison, or I could pay and not go to prison, right? Or I could not pay, they could threaten to take me to prison, and then I could resist at my home with firearms, as I have a right to do, and then they could attack me and claim that I was the bad guy, that I was engaging in the aggressive violence when they're the ones who engage in the aggressive violence at every step. And I'm just saying, please leave me alone, right? So now we're all going to have to pay if this goes in their favor. And I hope it does go in their favor. But some anarchists might say, hey, man, they willingly sign on. They willingly sign on from the military, and it's up to them to take this choice or not take this choice. Well, I understand. I understand how that goes, and I understand how some people could argue, look, this is a choice that they didn't know they were going to be presented with. They didn't know about this. This is a moral choice as well, because these jabs, both Moderna and Pfizer, were developed through the use of fetal stem cell lines. So if you believe in the right to life, then why in the world would you want to get injected with the byproduct of death, of murder of a child? So all these things are mixed in. The question is, again, what do soldiers agree to do? And is it even moral to agree to fight for a polis when you know that the only way that the polis can get its money is through aggressive violence against taxpayers? So how does that all work, right? To me, as a voluntarist, as an anarchist, as some people in Argentina might be familiar, I say at every point, if there is force involved, it is immoral. If there is aggressive force involved, it is immoral, and you got to try to get away from it. And that goes all the way down to, does an anarchist use the roads? If the roads are put up around him, does he have a choice? Does he just stay in a box? I think there comes a point when you recognize that you have to try to engage in life against the things that have been imposed on you, and there's a difference between that and voluntarily taking on something that you don't have to take on. So I'll leave it at that as far as this Breitbart story goes regarding this new lawsuit. It is going to be huge. It is just out. It's breaking information. Now, we've got more court information for you, everybody. This one, the Department of so-called justice. They want firearm bans for cannabis users. Now, we've spoken about this before. We talked to Toby Leary about this, about both the Heller standard and the Bruin standard. The Bruin standard piled on top of the Heller standard, which came in 2008, just about this time. The Bruin standard, just almost 2 years ago now, year and a half ago, the Bruin standard coming from the New York Rifle and Pistol Association against both the city of New York and the state of New York. The state of New York allowed the city of New York to have more stringent so-called concealed carry laws, basically making it impossible if somebody wanted to leave his residence in New York to go and actually even take target practice at a place outside the city. So this lawsuit was brought about by the defendants or by the plaintiffs in the New York Rifle and Pistol Association. It was argued against Bruin, who was a member of the government at the time of Andrew Cuomo's government. And the Supreme Court found in favor of the plaintiffs. But they set up this standard, and this is sort of where it comes in. They set up this standard that actually puts into question a portion of the 1968 Gun Control Act, and all of it should be put into question because none of it is constitutional. None of it is moral. It is all based on aggression. But if you look at their rule book, the Second Amendment strictly forbids all of the provisions of the 1968 so-called Gun Control Act, okay, which bans certain types of guns and also prohibited people who were convicted felons or were suspected of using drugs, of being drug users, I should say, of being able to carry firearms. That's where the Hunter Biden stuff comes in, because he admitted that while he had a firearm, he was a cocaine addict. I think he probably still is. And it also indicates to us that the Bruin standard stepping in needs to be questioned a little bit. It might feel very comfortable for some people, but as Toby Leary and I discussed, it actually provides a false sense of security to many people who think that this new Bruin standard will actually defend their right to self-defense a little bit better. The Bruin standard stipulates that the first thing any judge has to do when looking at a statute that restricts the right to keep and bear arms against a certain person, like the 68 Gun Control Act, or like a so-called red flag law or anything like that, is whether or not the statute conforms to the wording of the Second Amendment. That should be it. Because the Second Amendment would then say all such statutes restricting anybody outside of a prison or a jail where they might be held, anybody who's out and not being affected by the courts being pulled in and jailed, should be able to exercise his or her right. Not, as I mentioned, the logical, practical thought that comes to mind, you know, sort of like a jagged thing poking out of somebody's head, maybe like a mold spur popping out, is, wow, look at what just grew out of my mind, a thought. Hey, if somebody is not safe enough to allow outside of prison to hold a gun, then why are you allowing him outside of prison? Maybe there's a problem with your prison system, right? So if they're out, then they should be deemed safe enough to exercise their right to self-defense and to keep and bear a firearm. However, that's not what the 68 Gun Control Act did. Of course, Lyndon Johnson, what a classy dude setting that one up. So this story that you see here from Benzinga actually ties into this and has to do with marijuana. And the curious thing is, I saw this and I had to go through a bunch of steps, and it was like all these different marijuana magazines that were reporting on it. They're like, do you want to receive this from Marijuana News? And they're like, no, I don't. I get enough stuff from places. I don't smoke pot. No, thank you. But anyway, the Department of So-Called Justice under the Biden administration, you know, Biden, whose son is a drug addict, wants to make sure that people who use marijuana can't have firearms. Now, there's a bunch of stories here that they go through, Maine, medical marijuana, and stuff like that. So I need to scroll down, because every time I go to this tab, it resets the tab. So let me go back here and just find this one here. Here it is. DOJ fights for firearms ban for marijuana users. Wouldn't it be nice if DOJ fought for firearms for people? But no, it's not going to happen. So what they're doing is, and this is where we brought up the Bruin standard, they're trying to claim, and this is the problem that I saw with Bruin, they're trying to claim that the second part of Bruin, remember the first part is the text of the Second Amendment, they're claiming that the second part, which we get to now, is pertinent here. The second part said, if you have a statute that is going to so-called limit the right. I don't know how you get those two. If it's a right, it's unlimited by the state. That's why it's called a right. That's the definition of a right. It's unattainable by the state. However, they say, if you've got a gun rights limiting statute, then first you look at the first section, which is, does it conform to the Second Amendment's words? No, it doesn't. But for some reason, then they have the second level. And the second level is, does it conform to some historical precedent after the Second Amendment was adopted in the Bill of Rights after 1791 or at 1791 and on, that could be used as a precedent to show that people at that time, actually did engage in a similar kind of analog to what you're saying your statute does today in 2027. As we know, this is the year 2027, as we all know. We're looking back at the front of 2023. This is a flashback episode of Liberty Conspiracy. We've gone back in the TARDIS. It's almost the 60th anniversary of Doctor Who coming up on the 23rd. So, God bless you, Tom Baker. Thank you for all the fun. So how does this, as I mentioned to Toby Lehrer, is like, this opens up a Pandora's box, because there are plenty of examples, I'm sure, that people could come up with where some sheriff or some local law enforcement guy got a drunk guy and took away his gun. And they can claim, just like they might have claimed that, oh, the Fugitive Slave Act was extant, they can claim, well, there it is, they did that. That doesn't mean it's right. That doesn't mean it's proper. And it certainly doesn't mean that it conformed with the Second Amendment. So they've got two standards that actually stand in juxtaposition. The first one, the text of the Second Amendment, is all you need. It says, shall not be infringed. So from that point on, any infringement, whether it has historical precedence from 1801 in some town or anything like that, is contrary to the wording of the Second Amendment. It's so stupid. It's so obvious. And here is the story, because this is what they're trying to get away with. Attorneys representing the Justice Department filed a brief with the U.S. Court of Appeals and the Third Circuit, which might not be too friendly to our freedoms, folks, arguing that the prohibition on firearms for marijuana users is reasonable, citing historical parallels to limitations placed on the mentally ill and those with chronic alcohol problems during the era when the Second Amendment was ratified in 1791, reported Marijuana Moment. Well, then you have to say, why is it that the Second Amendment says shall not be infringed? And it doesn't say shall not be infringed unless somebody is a habitual and chronic alcoholic or is mentally ill. Who determines what mental illness is? Just ask Thomas Sasse about that. He wrote so much about the state defining what was mental illness and what was mental health. He, of course, being heralded by libertarians and, of course, passed away. Rest in peace, Dr. Sasse. The latest legal action is part of the case of Eric Matthew Harris, in which the government is defending the marijuana-related ban against him after being convicted for violating the federal statute that prohibits the possession of a firearm by an individual deemed, quote, an unlawful user or addicted to any controlled substance. So they made his possession of a firearm unlawful because they made a term up called unlawful user. See how that works? You just make it up whole cloth. Well, you see, we got this term over here that we made up, and it says unlawful user, and that's you. So the unlawful user term applies to you, and since the unlawful term applies to you, now our next step is going to be taking your firearm away. So here is the so-called DOJ. Given the impairments caused by marijuana and other illegal drugs, the temporary disarmament of individuals who regularly use or are addicted to such drugs fits comfortably within this nation's historical tradition of firearm regulation, DOJ said. As explained, drug users are also more likely to use firearms to commit crimes to fund their drug habit. You know how those pot users are. Hey, man, everything's cool, but give me your money, I need pot. Oh, no, that's right, they're not like that. Yes, they have to engage in violence. Hey, how about this? They say it's part of the drug business or culture. Isn't that funny? It seems like every time you make something prohibited and people can't deal with each other above board and actually take each other to so-called courts, and they have to do stuff on the black market, criminal threatening and thuggery actually enters the picture. Isn't that funny? I mean, it did it with alcohol prohibition, and you could just replace that with alcohol. It's just so strange. I know, it's crazy. Now, there are other stories on tap from the courts. So let's go to more court information. I want to give you a little bit of amplification on the marijuana story. Here's a little bit more. Biden's Justice Department says marijuana consumers are unlikely to store guns properly in their latest defense of the federal ban. This last story didn't talk about that. Oh, it's about storing the guns properly. Who says what is proper storage? That's right, the government. They're assuming everything here. How do they know? The Biden administration has once again found itself in federal court defending a ban preventing people who use marijuana from buying or possessing firearms, arguing that historical precedent comfortably supports the restriction and that cannabis consumers with guns pose a unique danger to society, in part because they're unlikely to store their weapon properly before using marijuana. Do you think they said that to, Major Christmas of the United States forces guarding the poppy fields in Afghanistan when, Geraldo Rivera interviewed him? Yeah, that was awesome, wasn't it? They all had firearms. They were walking around the poppy fields. I guess firearms are okay when you're the government guarding the loot. Yes, let's continue. In a brief submitted to the U.S. Court of Appeals of that wonderful Third Circuit on Wednesday, attorneys for the Justice Department responded to a series, this is last week, a series of prompts from the judges asserting that the firearm ban for marijuana consumers is justified. And the federal government has repeatedly affirmed those analogs, which must be demonstrated to maintain firearms restrictions under a recent Supreme Court ruling. Bruin! The Bruins. Little bears. They're just little bears. They're so cute. Yeah, don't let them get in your honeypot. For the case before the Third Circuit, the government is defending the ban against Eric Matthew Harris, who was convicted of violating the federal statute prohibiting the possession of a firearm by a person who is an unlawful user or addicted to any controlled substance. As the Daily Caller at first reported, Harris's legal representation also submitted a supplemental brief to the court on Wednesday that broadly disputes both the substance of the conviction under the statute as well as the idea that there are relevant historical analogs. So they're trying two prongs. One is that the accusations don't actually apply because they are erroneous. Many of the government's arguments have been raised in prior court cases. For example, the Justice Department said that the answer to the court's question about whether habitual recreational use of marijuana can produce schizophrenic-like mental illness is yes, and for that reason, habitual drug users may lawfully be disarmed for as long as they continue to unlawfully use drugs. Can they take away their driver's licenses? How about scissors or knives or any other thing that can be used as a weapon? How about rocks? Can't go outside. Might smash somebody in the head with a rock because, you know, you're a habitual recreational user of marijuana. There's plenty more Liberty Conspiracy on Free Talk Live. Come.
This is an urgent warning. America is heading for another major financial disaster at an alarming rate. We could see stock prices fall as much as 50%, but this time the crash could be more violent and come faster than you ever imagined. We are Advantage Gold, America's most trusted precious metals company, and we are here to sound the alarm that winter is coming for investors. And now is the time to take actions that may help protect and secure your portfolio with physical precious metals. Want to help protect your hard-earned money before it's too late? Call Advantage Gold at 800-900-8000 and request our free gold and silver survival kit today. Mention that you heard us on the radio and learn how you could get up to $1,000 in free silver coins. The number is 800-900-8000. Call now to get your free survival kit and see if you qualify for $1,000 in free silver today.
Advantage Gold is not an investment advisor or a tax advisor. Check with your financial advisor before investing.
Call 800-900-8000.
Hi, I'm Dr. Joel Wallach, the Dead Doctors Don't Lie guy. There's no reason why you shouldn't live to be at least 100 and have a great time getting there. And I'm going to give you a free copy of my lecture that tells you exactly how to do it. In fact, after you've lived a long and healthy life, there should be only two documents in your medical chart, a birth certificate and a death certificate. I'm Dr. Wallach with a warning. If you have a 4-inch medical chart, if you take prescription drugs for high cholesterol, high blood pressure, arthritis, joint pains, and other health issues, the medical profession is failing you. They're using you for an ATM machine. My free lecture is going to reveal what pharmaceutical companies don't want you to know. There's been groundbreaking research and discoveries on how to effectively treat or eliminate over 900 different diseases naturally. This is all in my free lecture called Deadly Recipe. So call toll-free 1-855-79-YOUNG. Again, that's toll-free 1-855-79-YOUNG. 1-855-79-YOUNG.